Look, every generation is the what were you thinking generation. First time I flew to this city, I smoked on the plane. Who thought that was a good idea, smoking? I'll tell you who, everybody. Everybody was completely fine with it. It's just what we did, you know? I mean, doctors used to do cigarette ads. I'm not kidding. You can look up an old Life magazine. A lung surgeon needs steady hand. I swear you can find that. They used to put heroin in cough medicine and cocaine in soft drinks. That was not a bad idea. We used to, like, litter out the car window. Like, whatever was in your head, just fucking throw it out the window. Nobody thought that was wrong. And then they made the commercial with the crying Indian, and we were like, oh, I didn't know that made Indians cry. I'm sorry. We don't have to throw shit out the window. And we stopped, you know? I mean, my mother drank during her pregnancy, and I came out perfectly normal.
Good morning. It is Monday, May the 22nd, and this is The True Conservative. Welcome to all the butchers, bakers, and candlestick makers out there. I'm Ron, your host, and the only true conservative in the United States today. So today, after the Serenity Prayer and the Star Spangled Banner, we will have polling, my take, no free lunch, the rape of the mind, and you decide. All that and more when I get back. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen.
Ladies and gentlemen, please remain standing and remove your hats for the national anthem of the United States of America.
Thank you, thank you. And now, there's no free lunch, 250 Economic Truths by David Bahnsen.
We owe the origin and development of human society, and consequently of culture and civilization, to the fact that work performed under the division of labor is more productive than when performed in isolation. Ludwig von Mises. At each point in human history that we see major and definable and significant steps forward in the progress of civilization, in the quality of life of people, there was some manifestation of division of labor at work.
And that was There's No Free Lunch by David Bahnsen. Back in a minute. Thank you, thank you. Who is the true conservative? He is the person that understands that conservatism is not just about politics, but culture as well. He is not selfish, but minds his own business. He acts like an adult. He is patriotic and uses common sense. He expresses what he knows and does so with absolute certainty. He makes judgments, refuses to speculate, speaks clearly and definitively, and is not afraid to say no. He's open-minded, asking why rather than why not. He is consistent, credible, and influential, not ashamed of his existence, unafraid to learn or correct his mistakes. He's a normal American, and he is better than the socialist. He's a better friend, father, brother, family member, and a better person, period. You have to know that. If you don't know with every fiber of your being that being a true conservative is best, then you're wasting your time. Back in a minute. Thank you, thank you. What are the true conservative suggested political priorities? Number one, the abolition of abortion throughout the land. Number two, make nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons obsolete. Number three, immediate decertification of all public employee unions. Four, the immediate assignment of criminal and civil liabilities to all government regulators. Number five, the immediate repeal of the so-called Patriot Act. Number six, the immediate repeal of all emergency dictator laws. Number seven, the reinstatement of writs of outlawry. Eight, government-sponsored recalls, ballot initiatives, and referendums. Nine, a flexible minimum wage. 10, means-tested health care. 11, the immediate and permanent prohibition of investment banking by any office holder. Back in a minute. Thank you, thank you. So now on Stewart and Varney, something very interesting. Listen to this.
According to a pair of recent polls, let's take a look at those numbers. As these debt ceiling talks continue today, 58% of Democrats want to reduce the budget as part of a deal. That's according to an AP NORC survey taken earlier this month. And let's take a look at one specific sticking point in these talks. Work requirements. Nearly two-thirds of those surveyed in an Axios Ipsos poll support work requirements for Medicaid and SNAP benefits.
So there you go. He reported the first poll incorrectly by saying 58% of Democrats. He reported the second poll correctly. He said two-thirds of those surveyed. That's correct. That is right on the money. He has no ability, no one has any ability to say that these polls represent anybody other than those surveyed. Back in a minute. Thank you, thank you. And now, Stuart Varney's My Take.
I don't spend much time on European policy. The socialists have turned the continent into a vast museum. But dumb ideas over there have a nasty habit of popping up over here. So with that in mind, I got nervous when I read a report in the influential Economist magazine about a three-day Beyond Growth conference held in Europe's sclerotic, bureaucratic capital. That would be Brussels. This bunch thinks we have to degrowth, or décroissance in French. One of the senior attendees says, when your economy is mature, well, it doesn't need to grow any longer, end quote. Ursula von der Leyen was there. She's the president of the European Commission. They all say, stop growing, shrink. Go from welfare state, where Europe is now, to the social ecological state of the future. To get there, of course, you've got to control everything. Banks, energy, education, forget the military, and take the money from those who have it. Watch out. We're hearing exactly the same kind of thinking here. What's the green movement but the forced takeover of the entire energy industry? What are Senators Warren and Sanders demanding? You know what it is. Take it off the rich. And what did AOC say about having children? Don't have them, she says. They pollute the planet with people. It's only a matter of time before there's a no-growth conference here, probably at a prestigious university, probably including far-left politicians. I thought I'd left the socialists behind when I came here 50 years ago. Apparently not.
So that was Stuart Varney's My Take. And a couple of things on this situation here is that, first of all, when they're talking about no growth, what they're really talking about is the gold standard. If you move to the gold standard, the economy has a tendency to shrink because gold has a tendency to increase in value, and so your money has a tendency to increase in value, but it's because the economy has a tendency to shrink. So this is important because Republicans and conservatives can get in on the game by providing a competing vision of a no-growth economy by promoting a gold standard. A gold standard economy is individualistic and has very little government to it. The government is kept in check in a gold standard economy in many ways. So, but that's an excellent gold standard economy is an excellent way of promoting conservatism. Now, what they're talking about in Europe, of course, is to use more and more government to basically, as soon as companies start making some money or start growing, they'll take the money away, I guess. I don't know what the details on this particular disaster are. But the point here is Republicans and conservatives can get in the game. The way it usually works is the left comes up with an idea. They say they use trigger words like the future. And this is the way they start selling it. People get excited about it, and then they look to the Republicans and ask the Republicans, what have you got? And the Republicans always say, nothing. We're against it. We're against it. And this is an opportunity to provide a competing vision for the future. And a gold standard economy. Maybe we don't want to refer to it as a gold standard economy. Maybe we want to use some kind of for lack of a better term, euphemism for a gold standard economy. But the point is, if you provide somebody with a competing vision, you got a shot. Because if the people have the choice between something, which is this European vision, and nothing, which is the Republicans saying no, they're going to take something over nothing every time. And the Republicans have never, ever learned that lesson. Co-opt the message and steer the program in our direction. It's one of the ways to say no. You say no when you can, when you have the authority to do so. Otherwise, you say no and then negotiate, or yes with conditions. Back in a minute. Thank you, thank you. So now I'm going to be doing another You Decide segment, and this is going to be about the health of office holders and or candidates. So you got CNN and Fox, and they're going to be talking about the president, Dianne Feinstein, John Fetterman. So we're going to start with CNN.
New revelations tonight about health complications suffered by Senator Dianne Feinstein are only adding to concerns about the 89-year-old Democrat and whether she's up to finishing out her term. Her office confirming that Senator Feinstein had encephalitis and Ramsey-Hunt syndrome during her recent bout with shingles. Brian Todd is taking a closer look for us. Brian, Senator Feinstein is standing firmly on her decision to keep working after decades of public service.
She is digging in, Wolf. Senator Feinstein displaying the same kind of toughness, some say stubbornness, that's enabled her to build a base of power in San Francisco and here in Washington.
Senator Feinstein.
Tonight, Senator Dianne Feinstein's positions on crucial committees like the Judiciary, Select Intelligence, and Appropriations panels remain intact, despite growing pressure for her to resign because of her declining health. A resoluteness that's been more than four decades in the making. November 27th, 1978, the moment that catapulted Feinstein as a national political figure.
Both Mayor Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk have been shot and killed.
As leader of San Francisco's Board of Supervisors, Feinstein had to announce the assassinations of the city's mayor, George Moscone, and a popular fellow board member, Harvey Milk, at the hands of a disgruntled former board member. Her suit stained with Milk's blood after she tried to administer aid to him. a moment that changed the trajectory of Feinstein's own life.
She was actually thinking of stepping away from politics at that moment, but she ended up being elected mayor of San Francisco, and it vaulted her into that position.
She was San Francisco's first female mayor, a position she held for nearly a decade. Then, another first, Feinstein and fellow Democrat Barbara Boxer were elected as California's first female senators. Feinstein proved crucial in getting an assault weapons ban passed in 1994. Years after that ban expired, she tried and failed to get it passed again after the Sandy Hook school massacre.
I was a mayor for 9 years. I walked in, I saw people shot. I've looked at bodies that have been shot with these weapons.
Feinstein became the first woman seated on the Senate Judiciary Committee. As the first woman to lead the Senate Intelligence Committee, many believe her crowning achievement was a 6,700-page report in 2014 on the CIA's role in torturing terror suspects. The subject of the movie The Report, Feinstein, played by Annette Bening.
Why do you need to do it 183 times?
More recently, Feinstein was criticized by fellow Democrats for praising Republican Senator Lindsey Graham's handling of the Judiciary Committee's 2020 confirmation hearings for conservative Supreme Court Justice Amy Coney Barrett. Feinstein remained tenacious through that, just as she is now with this controversy surrounding her health. The kind of grit, some say stubbornness, that's led to multiple accounts that Feinstein is demanding of her own staff.
She's very, very tough, a tough person to work for. I mean, also, again, this is a person who doesn't take vacations, whose whole life is devoted to work. I think people like that expect the same of the people who work for them.
Annie Carney of the New York Times says this current swirling controversy over Senator Feinstein's cognitive ability and her fitness to serve could hurt Feinstein's legacy. But Carney believes that if Feinstein can still help Senate Democrats push through the nominations of progressive judges who they're trying to place on the bench, her legacy will be harmed a little bit less. Wolf?
Brian Todd reporting. Thank you, Brian, very much. Joining us now, the former...
Okay, that was CNN's take, and now Fox News.
Questions are starting to mount within Democratic circles over the mental fitness of some big-name party leaders. We just saw Joe Biden stumble down the stairs to greet G7 leaders in Japan. But scenes like this aren't new. We've seen our 80-year-old president look confused and off balance far too many times. And Biden's not the only Democrat whose recent behavior has caused concern. A new op-ed in National Review points out that the Democrats have a growing cognitive problem. One of the other Democrats mentioned in that piece is Pennsylvania Senator John Fetterman. We're now learning that Fetterman's office is doctoring his quotes on the Senate floor to make him sound more coherent, including this comment from yesterday.
The entire GOP debt ceiling negotiation is a sad charade. And that's exactly what's wrong in Washington. We're playing with the livelihoods of millions just so the GOP can just turn the screws against hungry Americans. This is the whole reason why the 14th Amendment exists. We need to be prepared to be using it. Again, remember, say that again. We must be prepared to in order to use it.
California Senator Dianne Feinstein is another Democrat getting attention. The 89-year-old's health has been in question after a months-long absence from Capitol Hill. Feinstein's office said at the time that she was dealing with a case of shingles, but they've since confirmed that the senator was also dealing with Ramsey-Hunt syndrome and encephalitis. California Democrat Katie Porter is running for her Senate seat and says it's time for a change.
I do think that the Senate and our country needs to look forward and think about how are we going to address these issues going forward. We're going to have more people who are absent. We are going to have more people who fall sick. We are going to have more senators who age, given the age of the body. I think we do need to have some policies like every other workplace in America to think about what are you going to do when someone becomes infirm, either for the short term or the long term.
And I think the question remains, Tommy, that for those on the left that kept arguing that any type of questioning was irredeemably cruel, well, it seems like they've joined that body, and I think it points to the question simply being neutral.
Right. Well, and it's also important to know that some people have some aspirations to take some seats here. So I think that that probably also comes into play. But this should not be a partisan issue, right? You should be able to serve the constituents that you were elected to serve. And if you're unable to do that, the noble thing to do would be to step down with grace and resign with grace. Allow somebody else to fill that position. Allow somebody else to represent your constituents. Even if it's not a way that I want them to be represented as a Republican, it doesn't matter. These people deserve to have somebody that can be there, that can do the job. So we have to talk about this with, obviously, with some sensitivity. We know that we all have aging people in our lives. We feel horribly watching them age, but you shouldn't be in a position where you're letting your constituents down. You're not doing your job. I also think, well, I'm sure we'll have this discussion, but when it comes to Dianne Feinstein, this is a pioneer, right? Someone that deserves the utmost respect, has built a legacy. And to me, the fact that Nancy Pelosi may be propping her up because she wants Adam Schiff in that position is disgusting to me, quite frankly.
You know, I was looking back at, you know, you look at FDR, who died in office in his early 60s, right? And then I looked at Ronald Reagan's farewell speech, and I looked at the Berlin Wall speech, which he gave when he was 76 years old. And later on, we learned that he was struggling with some issues, some health issues later on in his presidency. But when you look at those speeches and you look at that farewell speech, he was very sharp at the, at least he was able to, you know, have the strength to function and do that job in that way and create some of those truly memorable moment, historic moments and speeches. You know, I think this is such an across the aisle issue. Every one of us, when we were just watching those clips of John Fetterman, it makes you uncomfortable. You feel bad for this man. I recently ran into him in Washington, introduced myself, said hello. He was very disoriented. It's apparent in everything that he does. Bernie Sanders is looking at his shoes, you know. The other gentleman on the right-hand side of the screen is like, I think I have some in my pocket. They're uncomfortable. I don't know what the answer is. I mean, maybe there is some way to have some kind of very neutral medical group that says when there's a situation like this, we have to do some kind of evaluation that cannot have any context of politics at all, and maybe put forward a report. You know, this person is or isn't able to serve in their job. But I think Katie Porter makes a great point. If any one of us wasn't able to function in our job, it would be, you know, there would be a discussion. I'm sorry, you can't do this anymore.
Yeah. So my concern with, you know, it's a great idea where you have sort of a neutral medical body, but you know that's going to get weaponized somehow, right? I mean, everything always gets weaponized. Mm-hmm. The only answer here really for the age issue, and it'd be impossible to do. I mean, half our country can't even agree what a woman is a constitutional amendment. I mean, when you go back to 1787, people weren't living until 80, 90 years old.
But some people are sharp as a tack at 94.
Right. But you
and
have
some
to have
people
an objective
are not at 78.
You have to have an objective measure or else you allow for weaponization. That's the only thing that I can say safely is going to create an objective measure where it cannot be abused by the government.
Yeah. And some reporting on it would also be helpful. I mean, we cover this here at Fox. We just did a whole segment on it. The American people are clearly interested. We've seen in polling that they question the abilities of Joe Biden going forward. But I just wonder why we don't see the same level of apocalyptic headlines on this issue. I mean, my former boss, Trump, when I worked there, he had a hydroplane down a ramp. It was slippery. And you'll remember the New York Times headline, Trump's halting walk down ramp raises new health questions. The president also appeared to have trouble raising a glass of water. No, he raised plenty of glasses of water. That was never an issue. That's patently absurd. CNN even ran a whole segment as to whether he was scared of stairs. But Biden stumbles down the stairs today. And look, I stumble down the stairs. I'm not suggesting that that's indicative of a health issue, but where's the apoplectic headlines? They just don't exist in the way that they did for a Republican.
That's right. And I think about, too, the circles that surround these people who are clearly unwilling or unable, perhaps in their disorientation, to release that power. Where are the confidants and the counselors that mm-hmm. say behind closed doors, it's time? Mm-hmm. Because if the media doesn't have
family members even.
Exactly.
Right.
If the media is not covering it, how do voters know and how do voters have a choice when there's no term limits or people have this, again, refusal to relinquish? Hey, everyone. I'm Emily Campagno.
Okay, so that was CNN and Fox News each dealing with the issue of infirm office holders. And what you'll notice, or what I noticed with CNN, is that personalized it. Their whole story was all about Dianne Feinstein, the person. It was about like a mini biography. Whereas with Fox and Fox News, they dealt with the issue itself. And that is, the issue is whether or not a person that is infirm or no longer capable of serving should step down, and what should we do as voters if they refuse to do the smart thing and step down. So those are the two angles that I saw in there, but it's you get to choose, you get to decide. Back in a minute. This is Ron, your host, the only true conservative in the United States today, bidding adios to all the butchers, bakers, and candlestick makers out there. So I'm reminding you that the left has no authority, no power, and they can't win.